Welcome back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and this is your Wiretaps Podcast for Monday, February 17th, 2020. I'm joined by Alex Brown, as always. Alex, how's the last week been for you?
Very good. Thank you, Graham.
Good. So last week was a kind of exciting week, right? I know there was some big news coming out of Wharton with the interview invitations, a lot of people chatting on the site and things like that. So are we at the end now? Like, is interview season over? Is there anything coming up this week that people need to keep an eye on?
Yeah, don't tell the folks waiting on Yale and Haas and Stanford and such that it's over, because that would definitely not be sending the right message. I mean,
okay, yeah, no.
Yeah, clearly. And it has been a big conversation on LiveWire, actually, particularly with Yale and Haas. You know, we haven't heard much lately. Is it over? What's the thing? And I would tell candidates out there, absolutely, there's probably several more weeks to be hearing from those schools. Stanford actually started releasing invites last week too, which was very nice to see. I think they're going to release over a period of a month, and we're upcoming with Sloan. It's the sort of last big school to get its first batch out this upcoming week, so there should be plenty of conversation and excitement going on this upcoming week too, Graham.
Good. Okay. And so, yeah, so still very much interview season. People are getting ready for those interviews.
Yeah.
I mentioned, I guess, last week that we've been recording some extra podcasts. And I think, the one that we did with the Columbia admissions director will really be out any day now. You and I, Alex, got together and recorded a really interesting episode about deferred enrollment programs. So this is for the younger crowd who's thinking about applying from university. So stay tuned for that. Other thing I wanted to mention is that, you know, for those of you listening who follow our Instagram account, we've been running these kind of Instagram stories where Alex Kelly, who's our kind of marketing person, has been wanting to kind of introduce our audience to, you know, to the team members. So Alex, you were actually first out of the gate with an Instagram story, and we got to learn a lot about you in terms of, you know, X number of years and admissions, and but also that you're, you know, a horseback rider and that you ran out some beautiful cottages or apartments on your property in Cornwall, England. So I think mine's coming any day now. So so for the listeners who want to get to know a little bit more about our personal lives, check that out. There's photos and all kinds of things about what we like to do with our spare time. The other thing that's been going on the site is we have that new series, Real Humans MBA Alumni, which we're basically talking to people who are at the very companies that our listeners want to be working for someday, and asking them, like, what was it like in business school? How did you get from business school to your job? And so a couple of the ones that have come out recently that I've really enjoyed reading are, there's a guy who's at Apple. I think he did his MBA over at INSEAD. There's an HBS grad who's at Facebook, or I guess Oculus, which is a company that Facebook owns that's based around virtual reality. And we just did a profile on someone who's over at Citi in the kind of finance world. And yeah, just we're trying to keep rolling these out. We've done Google, Amazon, McKinsey, and they're really interesting and just kind of quick hits where you get to know someone who has done the very things that you the listener, are setting out to do. Go off, get an MBA, and go get a great job. So stay tuned for those. I did want to give one other update, which is, Alex, you are now up to 143 likes in the Clear Admit community. So people are really liking the content that you're sharing.
Actually, Graham, it's 144.
Oh, no. Okay. So you're keeping like real-time stats on
this.
So doing well. And I know people appreciate all the advice you give. Last thing is, our podcast sponsor remains the evening and weekend program at the Kellogg School of Management. And you can reach your highest career goals while earning an MBA part-time. The evening and weekend MBA program at the Kellogg School of Management, which is conveniently located at their downtown Chicago campus, offers flexible study options to fit your lifestyle and match your experience. By graduation, you share the same toolkit, skills, and network as the school's most prominent alumni. So everyone, visit kellogg.northwestern.edu/EW to learn more. Thanks so much to Kellogg for all their support on this podcast. Alex, you've picked out a couple of ApplyWire entries and one DecisionWire entry, as usual. So we're going to go through. Is there anything else, though, that you wanted to share that doesn't include bragging about the number of likes you're getting on the site?
Honestly, can't wait to get started, Graham. Yeah, I would say in terms of the Instagram stories, one thing that you will learn about me if you view those is I'm actually really old now.
Oh, I don't know. It's, you know, it's all in your mind, you know.
Yeah.
And maybe when you wake up in the morning, how hard it is to get out of bed and stuff. But all right. So let's dive in, and we're going to do the apply wire entries first, and then we'll deal with this decision wire candidate who can't make up his or her mind. So let's start with apply wire. So this is wiretaps candidate number one. So this person is applying to Berkeley, MIT Sloan, Kellogg, Chicago Booth, and Wharton, and they're going to be applying in the next calendar year, so hoping to start in 2021. They have been working in project management in entertainment tech, and they want to kind of stay in the tech media space post-MBA. GMAT score is an astronomical 780, don't see many of those, and a GPA of 3.84. This person currently has about 4 years of work experience, and I guess they'll be at around 5 when they matriculate. So, you know, the other thing I should mention is that they said in their comment that they really appreciate clearadmit.com, and they said, reading your advice has been a great resource for me over the last few years. So always nice to just hear that kind of feedback. But this person studied...
That's why we picked the guy, Greg.
Yes. So this person studied computer science, business administration at a top 25 undergrad, and then they went into kind of a product management rotation program at a big bank, but pivoted from there into a large entertainment company and have been there for a little over a year. So do you want to talk a little bit about this candidate? Because on the surface, everything's pretty amazing in terms of experience, but there is a kind of footnote here, and it's a bit of a red flag. So do you want to talk about what this candidate told us in the notes?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if you look at this candidate's profile, on the surface, everything fantastic. As you said, 780 GMAT, 384 GPA, 4 years experience, and it looks like good experience. They say project management, Graham. In the second position, it certainly does look to me more like product management, a bit more broad than simply undertaking projects, but I could be wrong there. But anyway, the point is it does look like they've really got interesting experience too. Good ECs, extracurriculars related to music. They didn't divulge specifically what it is, but they basically said very unique extracurriculars in music during school and until now. So, and several awards, scholarships, yada, yada, yada. Very, very good. So the sort of elephant in the room, as it were, or the problem, and I'm trying to find the exact spot that where they wrote it. Okay, so the biggest red flag, and I think that the only red flag, quite honestly, for which I wanted your opinion, I was given 5 months of disciplinary non-academic probation in school by the housing department in my junior year for a pretty small incident that was ultimately placed solely on me. So sounds like the person took the punishment for a group of people, I suppose. For context, this is something every college kid does that I expect won't be considered a big deal. I was dealt with surprisingly harshly, in their opinion, and almost implies that it was to do with underage drinking, which I assume that we both agree that seems to be the crime in this case. Right, Graham?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it said underage and then blank, blank, blank. So, yeah.
And they say almost everyone's done this. Like, I don't know about you, Alex, but, you know, I never drank in college. I wasn't 21 yet, you know.
Full disclosure, I did college in the UK, so it's hard to drink underage in college since we're all over 18. So,
do they just hand out a pint with each exam when you go into the exam room
or
something?
Well, pretty much, yes, yes. Anyway, so this is a real struggle, I think, is what's the right approach in the application? Obviously, when asked directly in the application to address any suspensions or any probations and so on and so forth, then you have to address it. And as our colleague Elliot, I think, eloquently addressed, in summary, if it was a one-time incident from several years ago, you should be fine. I have seen plenty of applicants disclose and overcome similar infractions and still gain admissions to a top school. Thus, I don't think you will be dinged as long as you disclose it. And I think Elliot is pretty right in that assessment. The other issue is, what about the schools that don't ask the question specifically as an opportunity to disclose? Should the candidate then disclose this issue in the optional essay? And the answer to that, you can look at that, I think, in two ways, Graham, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, because this is where I think the candidate probably is struggling. They could be honest, open and upfront about it, address the issue, address why it's no longer a concern. And, you know, that honesty, I think, is something to be admired. You know, it's a quality, it's an attribute of a candidate. And if you're prepared to step up and take ownership of an incident that might not have been discovered anyway, I think that's probably quite a good thing to do. The other argument is, well, actually, if it's not on their transcript in any fashion, it's an undiscoverable issue. Nobody's going to, write to all the top MBA programs and say, by the way, X amount of years ago this happened, and so on and so forth. So it could be an issue that actually doesn't get uncovered at all. So how would you guide a candidate in that situation, Graham?
Yeah, I mean, it is tricky in this respect. I mean, I think obviously, yeah, if a school asks, have you ever been put on probation or anything of that, ever been suspended, they just have to address it. And I think being concise and upfront about it is fine. Look, I mean, I think I was joking before, but I think most people have had some alcohol before they turn 21 in college. I mean, it's kind of par for the course. And this person, it sounds like they were unfortunate. Not only did they get caught, but it sounds like they took the fall for probably hosting a party or whatever it was, right? So,
and there might be some lack of care on their part, not trying to resolve the situation before the punishment came down. I think I got that a little bit in their explanation. And they can talk to that too, right? You know, I was young, I didn't realize, so I didn't take the right steps, and therefore I took the punishment.
I mean, I think overall, they're probably best off disclosing it, whether it's asked directly or if it's not asked directly, just doing it in the optional essay. The reason I say that is because, I guess it is possible that this is nowhere to be found on their record. If it's not on their transcript and nowhere to be found, then maybe no one would ever know. But I do worry, because a lot of the schools do use third-party background check organizations to kind of verify everyone's credentials, and that does involve connecting with the school, verifying transcripts, and whatever else. And so I just worry that the optics on it would not be good if it came out after the fact. And so it's probably just better to be out in front of it. The only thing I will say is that there is the admissions reader out there who might kind of read that and be like, wow, okay, so was this person in a fraternity? Like, what kind of a candidate are we dealing with? Is it just literally a one-off thing, or is this person, could they be labeled? And that is the danger that they're going to sort of deal with. And they didn't disclose here whether they're a member of a fraternity, which, has some pros and cons, right? Sometimes fraternities do a lot of good work and people are, active in their community because of the fraternity, et cetera. But then they also often get labeled as kind of just an excuse to drink a lot kind of thing, right? So that could be problematic. But again, this person's numbers and experience are really off the charts. And so what I would do if I were an admissions officer is I would read this explanation. Hopefully it's humble, candid, concise. And all things being equal, I'm going to bring this person in for the interview, and then I'm going to judge, what I think of their character. And I'm going to, look at what the references say too. But it sounds like it's something they can overcome.
Yeah, I think you make a great point, though, about the background check. It's something I hadn't considered when responding directly on ApplyWire. But, you don't want to submit applications under any circumstances where you're concerned afterwards that something might be discovered. This advice isn't just for this particular candidate, but more broadly, it just makes sense to you be the revealer of any red flags, not someone else through the process, whether it's your recommender, whether it's your transcript or whatever it might be, right? So that's what your optional essay is for if you're not asked directly.
Exactly. And I do like this candidate. I was actually particularly interested in the fact that the outside activities are, it seems like there's a lot of stuff around music, which for those of you who see my Instagram story on the Clear Admit Instagram page, you'll see that I do a lot with music in my spare time. So I like this person, think they're going to be a great candidate. And I think they just need to address this issue and hope for the best. And, you know, they have a good list of target schools. They're obviously all top schools, but again, the numbers would dictate, you know, top 25 undergrad. Like, so I think this person is going to overcome this. And I think they just need to take the right approach, and best of luck to them. Should we move on to our next ApplyWire candidate here?
Yeah, I just wanted to add, you know, obviously the intro music to Wiretaps is Panama, and that's Graham's band. And yeah, I think this candidate is M7 material through and through. So I really do hope that they get the opportunity to go where they belong.
Agreed. And just to like defend myself a little bit here, I did not decide to put my own music as the intro. Our producer said that if we wanted to use someone else's music, we would have to go through all kinds of hoops copyright wise and payments wise. So he suggested that we use music that we had that was freely available. but hope everyone likes the intro music. So let's talk about Wiretaps candidate number two. So this person is also applying to start in 2021. They've been working in pharmaceutical operations and would like to stay in pharma or potentially do something entrepreneurial after business school. GPA is 3.68. They currently have a couple years of work experience, and they're looking at Dartmouth, Tuck, HBS, MIT Sloan, Stanford, Wharton, and Yale SOM as target schools. And they too happened to point out, and now I know, Alex, these are the ones that you pick. They said, hey, Graham and Alex, thanks so much for all the work you do on Clear Admit on the podcast. And they mentioned they've listened to most of the Wiretaps episodes and found them to be very informative. So there you go. Now, they did ask us some very specific questions, and you know, they laid out a lot of information in their notes. So I want to kind of throw it back at you, but one of the big questions they had relates to like, what they have this opportunity to move on into a different role within their firm, and they were asking for feedback on that. So I don't know where you want to start with this candidate, because there's a lot to tackle in terms of their goals and this short-term decision, but I'll let you kind of lead us through.
Yeah, I mean, we can be reasonably brief and to the point with this candidate, I think. I mean, obviously, I think they're very smart. They've got a 3.68 GPA, and they haven't taken the standardized test yet, but they reckon based on their, you know, love of standardized test taking or whatever it might be, but they're going to do very well in the standardized test too, which is absolutely fantastic. So they've gone through a rotation program in pharma, and now they have to choose whether to go into the supply chain side, I think it was, or the quality assurance side. Is that's correct, right, Graham? Quality assurance and control. As they exit the rotation program, I guess, for the next year of their experience before they apply to business school. So which choice is best? And, you know, Graham, I think you brought up the point that perhaps there's a bit more strategy involved in the supply chain side, some more strategy experience, so perhaps that might serve the candidate better. My sort of very bland answer to these types of questions always is, well, which of the two choices will provide you the most opportunity to grow, to learn, to really get your feet wet and do interesting things? And that might well also then lend to the supply chain management side. So I think both of us provided a pretty decent sort of perspective on what to choose in that regard.
I mean, I just to interject on that one, I think that they... obviously, both of these roles could be incredibly challenging and offer lots of opportunity. For one reason or another, when you hear quality assurance, you think of like someone who's just like testing a product or looking at, you know, defective products. And so that has like less of a weight than like supply chain management, which instantly sounds, you know, kind of more kind of senior level. And so I think some of that's just the you know, like stereotyping that goes on. So I would say all things being equal, the supply chain jumped out at me, but you're right. If they feel like there's some amazing opportunity in the quality assurance domain, then go for it. This is not going to make or break the candidacy.
And the reality is it's how the candidate then articulates
exactly
their experience in the essays and so forth. So a reader is not going to look at, oh, quality assurance, that's what they did for the last year, therefore it's X, Y, and Z. they're going to read about your experiences in the essays in terms of, you know, it's all about show, don't tell, various other things. And, you know, this is standard sort of essay writing. But so making sure that you make the choice that provides you the richest set of experience as you continue on your career path. This candidate has a bit of an unusual idea, I think, for what they plan to do post-MBA. So they want to come back, I think, into pharma in a more finance or strategy role, right? Which I think makes sense. I think in the application, hopefully they choose finance or strategy, not say I want to do one or the other, but is it finance or is it strategy? That would be good to really figure that out. And they've got another year before they apply, or, you know, 8 months to figure that pathway out a little bit more. They want to do that, my understanding is, for maybe, you know, 4 or 5 years, whatever it might be. But they're doing it all for a very different reason, Graham. They're really interested in the idea of leadership development and being a sort of mentor and setting up a business that advises and guides people, and I think at the undergraduate level, so young folks, on leadership development issues. And they reckon, and I don't know if this is correct or not, but they reckon they've identified a hole in the market that they can fill by offering this type of guidance and advice. To do this, they've already set up a YouTube channel, which I think is quite interesting, in order to develop content and so forth in this regard, leadership development, whatever it might be. So I think that's quite interesting, because it seems to me, Graham, that their career in pharmaceuticals is simply a backdrop to learn more about strategy and leadership in the workplace, which they're then going to parlay into this more long-term goal of developing this sort of business that teaches people about this stuff. And I think that it's going to be quite tricky, but very doable, to explain this very well in the application. So what are your short-term goals? It's to go into strategy in pharma. That makes perfect sense based on what they've done. What are your long-term goals? Well, it's actually to teach people about this stuff. And I've already started developing that aspect of my profile with this YouTube channel and some of this other stuff that I'm doing. So I think it's quite an interesting situation that they're developing, Graham.
Yeah, so I'm going to disagree a little bit. So the first thing I want to say is that I was a little confused by all this. Like, I guess I sort of understand what he or she wants to do, which is, you know, help people to sort of better manage their, you know, kind of college experience and then their early kind of professional career, like understanding, I think, like sort of your organizational strategy to approaching these things and how to be a better young professional. So, I mean, I get that. And I recognize that there is a massive market out there for what I would broadly describe as kind of leadership development and, or even kind of self-help, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. So I know there's a market out there, but the thing that was a little harder for me to figure out is, yeah, how it dovetails with what this person's done to date. And so part of me was like, wow, if they were a straight up, you know, healthcare professional with great numbers, looking at, you know, Wharton's on their list, which has that special healthcare management program, like, it's kind of a home run. You have great numbers. They've been working in pharma. They want to stay in pharma, do strategy. It's like an easy pitch. But then the moment that the head of the healthcare management program at Wharton hears, well, they also want to do this other thing that really has nothing to do with healthcare specifically. It's more about leadership development or something. Then it sort of flies off the rails for me a little bit. And I was just worried about that. So I'm not, this isn't to say that they shouldn't pursue this dream and this goal that they have. I just wondered whether in the context of an MBA application, it might, I don't know if it's going to be sort of too much. I mean, meaning I would almost rather hear that they're passionate about that and that on the side, they built a YouTube channel. They're having a lot of fun, helping people think through kind of how to organize their life in college and beyond and how to get a great start as a young professional. But it doesn't have to be a career goal. It could just be something that they're really interested in and passionate about in parallel to their kind of farmer career. So that's all. I was a little nervous about it.
No, actually, quite honestly, Graham, hearing you think it through, actually, it does make a lot of sense. I think the parallel you can draw here is the candidate that says, yeah, let's assume again they're working in pharma and they want to get back out in pharma in the short run, but then in the long run, they want to run for governor. Or in the long run, they want to get a PhD and become a professor. And you see folks with those sorts of ambitions. And again, they're not always well received necessarily by MBA admissions, who want to see people be leaders out there in the for-profit or non-profit world, doing really amazing things. Making these more unorthodox choices in the long run can be a little bit tricky. It's not undoable, I think you're exactly right. It creates a potential concern in the eyes of some of the ADCOM.
Yeah. So again, I think it's obviously admirable and interesting. I felt like it was just hard for me to sort of weave it all together, which is always, something you like to be able to do. I will say, that this person, we didn't really mention it, but they have a really interesting upward trend in their kind of GPA. They end up at 3.68, which is great, but they also, it was a challenging biomedical mechanical engineering degree. So there's a lot to like, and I wish this person the best of luck. And, obviously, they did phenomenally on the SAT, so they feel comfortable about, testing. So I think hopefully they'll end up with a great test score and can come in and, be a really strong candidate at any of the schools on their list.
Yeah, I do actually think this is a super smart person. And maybe, their goals as they're developed now are a little bit naive as a reflection of they're still very early in their career. They're still in that rotation program.
True. Yes, it's kind of a young...
Before they make that first step out. So those goals may evolve over a little bit of time. But it does bring up another quick question, Graham. I know we're running a little bit tight on time, but one commenter on the thread did actually ask us directly how the ADCOM perceives these types of rotational programs, i.e. the one that this person is in. I worry that having 2 years rotational with only 8 months in each role is going to be looked down upon when compared to other candidates with a lot of impact in one role for 2 years. So how do you address that, Graham?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of these rotational programs. I think they give, they give candidates exposure to a lot of different areas, and that makes the person like all the more useful when they arrive in business school and can, they've had an operations rotation so they can contribute in that class, but they've also done some marketing so they can, just speak up in that class, and they have, so I think they're generally viewed in a favorable light. I know the poster was worried that, oh, but you only bounce, you only get like 6 months or 8 months in a role, and do you see enough of it? But I think for the purposes of your pre-business school resume of experience, I think it's sufficient. And I think, again, schools tend to like these. And a lot of kids graduate from business school and go into these types of programs too. So I think it's generally viewed in a favorable light. And actually, on some levels, a lot of these programs are pretty elite and hard, not so easy to get into. And so it's like another signal to the committee that you made the cut and got into one of these high potential kind of young leaders programs. And so it's just a positive sign. I like them too, just because it meant for me that these candidates had seen a lot of different things, often in different markets too. Some of the rotations take people to another part of the world. And it's just a little different from the usual, okay, I'm a banker, I'm a consultant. So I like it overall. I don't think there's anything to worry about.
I agree with you. And especially the point you also make about, typically going into a rotational program, the candidates has to jump through some significant hoops to get that situation. So there's some selection process and so on and so forth. So I think they're generally looked at favorably by ADCOM. But yeah, the other point is you do need to still show some level of impact through your career as you're applying to business school. So you've got to figure that piece of the puzzle out too.
Yep, exactly. So best of luck to this candidate and to the other person who shared their concerns about being in a rotational program. So hopefully everyone's got the right strategy going forward. Let's talk about Wiretap's candidate number three. So this is a Decision Wire entry from a candidate who is undecided about where to enroll. And the person has offers from both Duke and UT Austin McCombs. And they also have scholarship money on the line. So with Duke, they were offered a $50,000 scholarship And over at McCombs, they were offered $80,000. They're obviously starting this coming fall, and they want to work in the energy sector post-MBA, and they really want to stay in the South or the Southeast. And, you know, just for the, I guess for our listeners' benefit, GMAT score was 690, GPA 3.46, just to give you a little more background there. This person's in the U.S., presumably a U.S. citizen. So that's the dilemma. And they indicate in their comments that they're kind of leaning towards McCombs because they want to stay in the South or Southeast, and because McCombs is actually technically giving them like a 70% scholarship, and whereas it's about 35% from Fuqua. Now, just so everyone understands, you know, Fuqua's price tag is higher because it's a private institution, and McCombs is a public institution, so the prices are different. That's why I know some of you are saying, oh, 50K versus 80, how's that, you know, double in terms of the, it's not quite, you know, but it's some of it has to do with the cost of the programs too. So what do you think of this person and their dilemma here, Alex? Because I think it's an interesting one.
Yeah. I mean, quite honestly, the reason why I selected this candidate is they got a deposit deadline this week for Duke.
In 2 days. Yeah, literally 2 days from now.
February 19th. So I thought it'd be quite good to chat about it real quick. Hopefully,
get them in time.
the candidate can listen. So the candidate says that they prefer to be in the south-southeast, so leaning slightly towards McCombs for those reasons. But the other commenters, a couple of other commenters, were fairly vocal in their support for Fuqua. So, you know, Fuqua is, you know, no if and or buts. I think we would consider it in a tier, maybe two tiers, but certainly a tier ahead of McCombs. You know, top 16 versus top 20, some, you know, in terms of those tiers. So if all else was equal, you would put Fuqua slightly in front, I would think. You would also imagine, I think, that Duke, Fuqua, recruits quite well in the south-southeast regions. I would think that's also their sort of, not necessarily backyard, but their sort of, you know, that's got to be good recruiting area for Duke, I guess, as well as McCombs being in Texas. But my point is, I wouldn't place necessarily McCombs above Duke because they want to be in the southeast. I think both schools, that's got to be their bread and butter in terms of where they can send people. So I would have to come on, you know, agree with the commenters on Decision Wire that suggest actually Fuqua might be the better choice in this case, Graham, despite this differential in the scholarship offers.
Yeah, I mean, this is tricky, right? So I think one of the problems is that this person is saying they would prefer to be in the south/southeast. And I think if it's southeast, then I think, you know, Duke has actually a clear advantage, right? They're placing more people in Atlanta and you know, in that general region of the U.S. Probably than McCombs would, right? But if we're talking about the south and specifically Texas, well, then McCombs is probably placing more people there. So I think it's a little weird to lump that together because they're different. They're slightly different regions. The other thing I want to just call everyone's attention to is this person wants to work in the energy sector. And we know that, you know, Texas has a ton of that. And all along the Gulf, there's a lot of, you know, energy sector jobs. And you know, UT Austin is known for having a lot of resources in this domain. So I recognize that on the surface, someone could say, hey, more money from McCombs. I probably want to work for an energy company. It's likely that I'll end up in Texas or along the Gulf somewhere. And so McCombs is the best choice, right? Because of those reasons. But I also hear what the commenters are saying and what you've kind of mentioned, which is that, you know, Duke is generally viewed as a sort of, you know, certainly top 15. Some people would argue it's, you know, right up against the top 10 type program. And McCombs is in the tier beyond that. You know, so I think people would argue that, oh, you know, Duke is a little more of a prestigious program, lower acceptance rate, all that stuff, right? So, yeah, so it's challenging. And I think what I would encourage this person to do is, you know, I'd love to know more about what kind of, like, what sort of energy sector work do they want to get involved in? And what side of it, like, are they interested in the finance side of energy, or is it more operations and supply? Like, what are they interested in? Because if they could figure that out and then network their way to talk to some alums from both programs, they might just get some very useful feedback and data about where they could land. I will say, I think one of the largest markets for Fuqua graduates is actually New York City too. They do send a lot of people back up into the Northeast. So it's just, they're kind of different schools and so this is not so black and white, but I think I would encourage this person to connect ideally, and you know, they could ring up the career services department at Fuqua, and I bet they'd be helpful in connecting this candidate with some alums working in energy, because I think that's really what it might come down to, is this candidate needs to feel more comfortable with their ability to place into the job and region they want from Fuqua. Because if they did, then they might say, oh, well, then I'll go to the school that's, you know, often viewed as being higher ranked or whatever. But I mean, and all this to say, like, we didn't even talk about fit, right? So ideally, this candidate spends some time at each program, goes to a welcome event, and can really get a feel for what the campuses are like and the student experience. I mean, I personally know that, I mean, both of them are really great. I mean, they're in these nice, what I would call, this isn't meant to be derogatory, but kind of suburban, you know, locations, right? So we've got kind of, obviously, Macomb's is in Austin, which, you know, they have a night, but Austin's not such an overwhelming city like New York or London, where they don't have a great campus, you know? So they have a lot of like great availability and access to companies while still maintaining a nice community. And the same thing, you know, you can argue, well, Duke's in Durham, but it's also, you know, they have a really beautiful rolling campus and lots of space and community as a result of that. So both of these schools, I think, offer a really terrific experience, but I would encourage the candidate to go and spend time and meet future classmates and talk to some alums if they can. And I recognize they have 2 days to write that check, so that may all just be too tall of an order. But I understand why for them it's a tough decision.
Yeah, and just to add one more quick point, it's always also think of the long-term implications of the decision. So making sure that, you know, that the network that you're buying into, is it useful in the short term? That's obviously top of mind. But, you know, 10 years down the road, you're part of a really interesting network. You might be relocating. You might be doing some different things. I think, you know, the Duke network may be sort of more sort of nationally strong in terms of allowing you more mobility. But if you know you want to stay in the South, if you're going in the South, then maybe that Macomb's network in the long run is the way to go.
Yeah, agreed. So I think, again, this is why we love these posts, because it's not always black and white. I think there are other sites out there that sort of, you know, would imply that you just, you know, oh, you just go to the best ranked school or whatever. But I think, you know, it's always, there's a lot that goes into the decision making here. And so I encourage this person to do a little more research, see if they can come to a conclusion. But again, congrats on getting not only those two offers, but also some money to boot. So that's terrific. That kind of brings us to the end, I guess. I mean, I think, these were great entries as always, Alex. Always appreciate, even though I know you're picking sometimes the folks who say nice things about us, I feel like these entries are really interesting and there's just lots of good kind of admissions advice that comes from them. So yeah, thanks for doing that as always. And thanks to all of our listeners for tuning in. We don't have any new reviews to share, but we're still kind of basking in the glow of a lot of the positive reviews that we've had of late. So thanks everyone for listening, and we will be back in 1 week's time with another edition of Wiretaps. So yeah, thanks again, Alex.
Yeah, very good. Best of luck, everybody.